Hello, cyclocross friends, and thanks for tuning into episode 46 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, this was a cool one. I had some folks stopping by in town for actually in Baltimore for Charm City Cyclocross. It's the Women's Cyclocross Project, and they've had some they've taken on some other riders for a couple months this season. Two Australians, Tom Chapman and Chris Aitken, and those two, along with Women's Cyclocross Project director and also my TDDTIE co-host Scott Dienbach, came down from Baltimore, where they're staying for the week, getting ready for Charm City, to come to DC, see the sights, check out some monuments, see, as Chris and Tom put it, all those things that show up in movies. So they went downtown DC to check that out. But before they did that, they came in to the basement and we recorded a podcast. So featuring those guys, we get to talk to Tom and Chris, learn a little bit more about them, and then go into a full-on TDDTIE episode without Mr. David Palin. But fear not, he will be back soon enough when we do this again. This week, sponsor-wise, still want you all to go out and support all of the sponsors that supported the Itch Tour. You've been doing an awesome job of that. Thank you so much. We've been getting great feedback from Feedback Sports, for instance, also from SDG Components, Easton Cycling, Orange Seal, Verge Sport, Squid Bikes. All of those companies have seen your support for Crosshairs Radio reflected in your support for what they do, and I really appreciate that. And thank you. Continue to send them tweets and just let them know that you heard about their companies through Crosshairs Radio. But what I really wanted to talk to you about today is an upcoming cyclocross race that I would love to see all of you at, and that is DCCX. That is the race that I help put on. It's taking place October 22nd and 23rd at the Armed Forces Retirement Home in Washington, D.C. It's an amazing venue. It's a great party vibe. It's superb racing. And we still have spots available. Go to bikereg.com, search for DCCX, and sign up. Come out and race. And then watch the UCI C2 event as well. It'll be awesome to have tons of people out there. I think you'll really dig it. It's worth making the trip down. You know, if you're from out of town, come on down for the weekend, race, see the sights, hang out, have a good time, and yeah, enjoy DCCX. So that's what we're doing this week, DCCX. Go to Bike Reg and sign up. All right, let's get on to the show. Once again, Tom Chapman, Chris Aitken, Scott Dienbach, all in the basement, TDDTIE, the Aussies invade.
I was just going to say, do you actually know what they're saying at this point, Scott?
Sometimes, yeah. It's like, I still every now and then have to go, I don't know what you're saying. But it's getting better. It's getting better.
And then I just have random words that I just say and nobody even knows what's
right,
going
and
on.
Even Tom like, doesn't know what they're
saying. Yeah, there's ones that I've got no idea.
So some of it is Australia, some of it's just Chris.
Yeah. I've got my own slang. East Coast slang, we'll call it.
East Coast slang. Australia slang.
Wait.
Nice.
Should we start?
Sure.
Because I already started recording.
Of course.
Yeah.
I figured that. I figured you were recording the minute we came down the basement.
There's like
an infrared switch, right? As soon as he trips it, it starts the recorder.
Just when they started talking in a language I didn't understand. I was like, that's where we go.
See, my buddies back home are going to be disappointed that I said VB and not West End. Because West End's our home brewery.
Nice.
All right. So this is they don't do that in Europe, right?
Sure, yeah, it can be. It's kind of it's a hybrid, right? Because we're doing like an interview and they don't do that in Europe.
So. Yeah, this is good. So everybody's going to get the behind the scenes discussion here. Without me, and I would like to take credit, without me having to struggle over how to work the equipment for a half hour like what usually happens before we record.
Yeah. No, this is impressive, Bill. I mean, we're here at the in the Crosshairs Radio World Headquarters, and it's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, so I want you to do the intro, and then you can introduce who's here.
Okay. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back with another edition of, I guess it's officially, They Don't Do That in Europe. On my right, Bill Chaiken.
Yeah, I'm actually like physically on your right now, not even on a screen.
Unbelievable. And it's just me and Bill today. No Mr. David Palin, but he will of course be back soon. But across the rail from us, first off, let's introduce Chris Aitken. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks guys. Thanks for having us.
And Tom Chapman.
G'day, how you going?
They are obviously from Australia. We've been talking a little bit, Bill, about the Australian guys that were going to be coming over and racing with our Women CX Project team. They are here. They've been here. This is Charm City. Will be our fifth race weekend in a row, and digging it, man. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So Providence. I'm sorry, Thompson, KMC Thompson. The week before, and then. Yeah, so y'all are on a little bit of a little bit of an East Coast tour here.
It seems like Rochester was like 5 years ago,
right? And,
I mean, so it was, yeah, Rochester Trek, all the Itch Tour stuff that was on the last show, and last weekend KMC, and now this weekend Charm City, and then finally a week off. So, how have you guys been doing with the fast paced schedule? That's more volume of racing than you guys are used to, right?
Yeah, it's definitely heaps more. Usually we have, like, I think, four trips away, so about eight races in our national series.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're already up to more than that whilst we've been here for less than a month.
And we still have, like, 4 or 5 weeks to go.
Yeah, a fair while to go, so we're only just getting started, really.
Yeah, so, well, let me just start with this, Bill. Guys, what's the main difference between racing here? Tom, why don't you ask it? Answer this. The main difference between racing here versus racing in Australia so far, from what you've experienced.
Yeah, I think the first thing to chat about is the level of competition, that's for sure. And that's part of the reason why me and Chris over here. I think compared to last year when we came over, it's really nice that you know, we had the level in Australia stepped up a lot, that's for sure. Something that we've noticed, and then that's prepared us a little bit better to come over here.
Right.
Obviously, the crowds is good, bit of heckling, the atmosphere, that's an awesome, awesome thing. And
weather, what about weather?
Weather-wise, man, it was hot when we got off the plane, and that's what I've experienced the last couple of times coming to the US, and nothing had changed, plenty of humidity, and that was something to get used to, but obviously everyone back here wasn't used to it either, so sort of a level playing field when it's that hot. It's sort of survival rather than thinking about tactics and all that sort of thing. So.
Yeah. And then rain. I mean, I think it's been 3 weeks in a row that we've set up the team camp in the rain. So,
yeah.
You guys don't see that much mud, right?
Nah, that's for sure. It's that sort of kicks off the vibe for the weekend as well. Chris and I love riding in the mud. It is a lot of work for the team and for the riders itself. But, yeah, it's awesome fun. And we only get a couple of rounds back home that was in the wet. So, it's a good opportunity to test out the skills early.
Yeah, I think very few people get to see mud like Jingle Cross, even here.
Yeah, especially Friday and even Thursday when you guys were riding around. That was probably the worst day, right?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah, sure. So tell us about the team that you guys ride for in Australia. What's the name? And it's got a unique name.
Yeah, so our team back home in Australia, it's called Focus Attacker. So pretty much it's one of the few cyclocross teams in Australia. There's probably about 3 to 4 main teams, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. We're lucky to have the support of Focus Bikes as one of the main sponsors, and then also Attacker, which is a pretty cool clothing company.
And how is that spelled again? It's spelled weird, right?
Attaquer.
Okay.
So you would never know there's an R at the end of that. That I will tell you.
Not with the Australian accent.
Yeah. So yeah, no, they're really great, and they help us out and hook us up with a lot of stuff. So we can't thank them enough. So
cool.
Yeah, with the support of a lot of other people behind the scenes and minor sponsors and stuff like that, it gets the job done, and we can get over here and race and be looked after.
Cool.
So. I'm just curious about your guys and how you got into cycling, and especially to cyclocross.
And what did you have for breakfast this morning?
We're getting there. Don't jump the gun. Yeah. I know this is they don't do that in Europe, but we're gonna do a little of the other
type too.
I love it. So yeah, start with you, Chris.
What am I saying?
Whatever you want. You can sing.
How did you get into cycling?
How did I get into it?
Oh, yeah, just okay. Cycling.
I was thinking about breakfast.
All right, what'd you have for breakfast?
Well, for breakfast. No, I first went down there and then I was scared of everyone, so I went back.
He's talking about the morning breakfast at the Residence Inn. We've got like these Verizon repairmen staying at the hotel, like filled the parking lot with these huge...
Oh, that's gotta be a party.
Yes, it's awesome. These guys are out in the parking lot riding the trainer this morning, and the guy's coming over. Oh, I gotta get one of those. Talking about the feedback Omnium trainer. I gotta get one.
They found the Wout Van Aert signed socks.
You got so many props. I know. You got so many props down here. It's like distracting, man.
I just want to like touch all the buttons on this board thing. It's fun.
So, anyways, yeah, Chris, how'd you get into cycling?
So pretty much started cyclocross about 4 years ago now. And there was a local series happening, and I sort of missed the first couple of rounds of it. And then a guy called Shannon Lister, who originally started Cyclocross Newcastle, he pretty much said, come down, have a race, and it's really good fun, you'd be suited to it. And then, yeah, next thing I knew, like 2 weeks later, I went and bought a cross bike, and yeah.
The rest is history.
Yeah, I just got addicted to it and kept on riding.
And you won Australian U23 National Champion when?
That was last year, so that was in 2015.
Okay, all right.
Yes. And I don't know, when I think about Australia, I think like track racing... road racing, not necessarily cyclocross. So, you know, were you riding on the road at all or doing anything, any other disciplines or?
Yeah, so I've done a little bit of road riding here and there. It's funny you say track racing because a lot of cyclocross races in Australia happen at velodromes.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures, yeah.
One of the few places that, so we have a lot of issues with tearing up ground and stuff like that in Australia if it does get muddy.
It's amazing because that's not an issue at all in the US.
Yeah, no right. One has problems with it.
I never have that problem.
So yeah, I think it's just because it seems to be one of the few places that, you know, a velodrome trust or something might have available land that they can use and they own, so therefore obviously all the grass and being ripped up isn't such an issue. So yeah, a lot of our racing happens at velodrome, so it's half velodrome race, half cross race.
Cool. So started on the road a little bit and then
ventured off into the cross. I also did a bit of mountain biking for a fair while there, so
yeah
enjoyed that as well. Cool. Bit loose on the dirt.
All right, so you had time now. What's your race day. We'll go race day. What's your... Oh, my God. A picture of me just appeared on Twitter.
who could have posted that?
Race day breakfast.
Race day breakfast? Yeah. I don't know. It depends where we're staying. We're staying at, like, a pretty nice place at the moment, so I just eat whatever's in the little buffet down there. We usually hit up the old scrambled eggs and then some cereal. I tried Fruit Loops here the other day. That was
first time?
Yeah. Well, first time in, like, US Fruit Loops. And it was just like, I was on a massive sugar bars. It was crazy.
What is the difference between Australian and US Fruit Loops?
Well, the US ones just taste like sugar and they're really nice.
We're good at that.
And then the Australian ones are sort of like a bit cardboardy, but...
Yeah, because they probably have some sort of nutritional value to them.
They actually have fiber in them.
That was just chemicals. Yeah. But there's waffles there that I think we want to hit up maybe like probably Monday morning before we leave. We'll hit up that little part of the buffet. But just a normal.
All right, Tom. Same thing. Getting into cycling.
Yeah, about the same timeline as Chris, about 4 years ago.
Now, Tom, you're a year younger, though, than Chris, right?
I am, yeah. Okay. All right. So, I raced motocross a lot in my school years. And then with that, I just wanted to get fit for motocross. So a friend sold me his road bike. And then all of a sudden stopped racing motorbikes and started racing push bikes in a pretty quick transition. And just sort of, you know, a fella called Sean McKay, he said, have a go at this cyclocross thing. And I had no idea. I had no idea what was going on. loved it straight away. Got into it. It was a local series run by Port Adelaide Cycling Club back home and raced B grade and then stepped up to A grade, and then Focus Australia is based in Adelaide. And so I got to know those guys real quick, and yeah, they gave me a demo bike to ride, and I just loved it. Stepped onto that, and slowly but surely started doing a little bit of national stuff, and yeah, just enjoyed riding the bike, so kept doing it.
Yeah. coming from motocross to cyclocross, I mean, I've talked to people in the past that have made that transition. Did it seem pretty natural, especially like reading lines and cornering and all that kind of, all those skills transfer over?
Yeah, I think so. That's probably something that other people noticed a bit more than myself. I didn't realize that was a particular skill to have in cross, was to try and set up corners and look for smooth lines and trying to pass people as well. I was pretty obsessed with passing people, and then worked out that it's actually bad to be on the front in some spots.
Right.
So that was a fun thing. But I think that's something that really naturally suited me, was a start, an aggressive start. And that's something you don't get in road racing. And it's sort of a bit of a, all right, guys, here we go, we're going type thing.
Yeah.
But in cross, you got to be ready, and it's on from the gun. So that's something I really enjoyed.
I know that you were, was it last year or first time y'all were in the U.S.?
It was actually the year before.
Okay.
Yeah, I came all over right. with a teammate, Jade Lean, for Cross Vegas.
Yeah.
And Cross Vegas only, that was the year before it was a World Cup. And it was a long way to come for one race, especially when I didn't do too good either. So, but I love the scene. Met some awesome people while I was over here, and that was enough to want to come back last year. And we came over for a little bit longer with another teammate.
Yeah, but you guys have to tell that story. Chris, you got to tell the story about how...
Oh, yeah. So last year, Tom, we were discussing maybe coming to the US and, you know, doing a little bit of a trip and cross Vegas and a couple others, the Alma GP and Rochester, which was like, yeah, really hot again. And then, so we're just discussing, we're like, oh, these races would sort of link up, you know, Alma GP, we had accommodation there in the middle of the week if we needed it. And yeah, so I just got this message, like, probably I didn't organize anything. Tom just messages me and goes, oh, yeah, yo, the travel agent, $2,000. And I was like, oh, okay. Righto. And he's like, oh, yeah, we fly out in 2 weeks. And I hadn't like, told the boss at work or anything. And
we fly out
like,
in
2 weeks. Sick, let's do it.
You owe the travel agent $2,000.
Yeah, so it worked out perfectly. So
I mean, you can't back out at that point, so it's good.
Yeah, so I sort of done the same thing to him this year. I was like, I just messaged him. I'm like, I've already booked your flight, so now you're coming.
Right, and we're going for 2 months.
Yeah, only so. I booked it a bit earlier. I didn't book 2 weeks. I booked like 4 months in advance. So we had a bit of spare time, but gave him the surprise that he found out he was going.
But yeah, something that was really cool this year was the fact that we met Scott last year.
Yep.
And the crew, and kept in touch ever since, all the way through our summer, through Christmas, constant emails, organization, and we were blown away by the standard of organization by Scott over here. It just made
it's been a little bit of a learning curve, but you guys are starting to get it,
man. It's so good. I was blown away.
Yeah, they just like you said, it was like they weren't quite there with the organization. But then I come into the hotel room and after the first day of KMC, and these guys are both sitting on their bed working out Amanda Nauman style, working out a schedule for the next day, race day, like in 10-15 minute increments, you know, the way Amanda does it. And I was like,
God, some of that engineering is wearing off.
Tom's sitting on the bed going, look at me, I'm developing.
small step.
And Tom, you just won U23 for Australia this year, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So that's cool. Very cool.
Thank you.
So what is it that you all aren't doing in Australia that you're over here for 2 months, and
what are you missing?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm pretty much missing work at the moment. I work at a local bike shop in Newcastle there. So yeah, it's pretty good there. We're right near the beach, so we get to go riding at the beach a fair bit just before work. And then yeah, also I do a bit of engineering at our local, I guess you guys call it a college, so yeah, a bit of that part-time as well, not full-time student there, but pretty much doing it whenever I'm not away traveling, which is very little.
what's the goal from this trip?
So pretty much goal from this trip for, I guess, myself, I'm pretty sure Tom's very similar for this. We sort of want to learn how everything works, I guess. It's more like a learning curve and also getting a lot of experience. So with obviously cyclocross, you don't just rock up and be the best straight away. There's no easy way to do it. You just got to show up to the races, learn people, learn how people ride, and just get used to the whole way everything works, the system, you know, just even before the race, pre-race. And then post-race, just learning how everything works. And then that way, when you go back home, you can apply that to your training to know, like, you've got X amount of time before, you've got, you need to do double sessions to make sure that you've only got short recovery to be able to back up for the next day as well. So it's all the small things that make the big difference for when you go back home, then you can apply those things to your training. Because we are racing week in, week out, there's not a great deal we can do throughout the week. You're very limited to what training, otherwise you end up being completely boxed for the next weekend's racing.
Yeah.
And Tom, is there anybody out there that you've seen, you know, you've been sort of racing against or with the same people now for a while? Is there anybody you're sort of secretly shadowing, sort of watching what they're doing, either in the men's or women's fields, to just sort of pick up tips on racing or just even getting ready for the races?
Yeah, I think so. Like, being here for 5 weeks now, starting to get to know everyone and looking at the results after each race and seeing the lap times and trying to study it as best I can, it's becoming more and more familiar. But I think one of the biggest learning curves was actually learning off the girls in the Women's CX project. How they operate is super professional, like, really cool to see. And not that we haven't got that back in Australia, but it's just a whole nother level. And the other real cool thing here is your calendar is UCI racing week in, week out. And that's something we just don't get the opportunity. Right. We get UCI points for our national championships and that's it, like said and done type thing. So, you know, we have come over here for 2 months. That's the plan. And that is a long time. But the racing week in, week out is just an awesome opportunity. And I think Chris and myself, the main goal is to try and get some UCI points by the end of this. And, try and get up there in some C2s. I think that's realistic, and I think it's slowly coming around. But yeah, rocking up to new courses each and every weekend, it's awesome to see the style of racing here, and obviously a lot more running than we get back at home, and that's something we've had to adjust to. trying to recover from that is ruthless. So
does that mean, you know, coming into next season beforehand, you're gonna incorporate more running into the training?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, we're heading to the sand dunes after last weekend.
And I think you said too, Tom, that you're starting to like recognize at races, you're starting to see the same people, so you know who you can ride with, right, as the race goes on. When you find yourself in a group, you're like, okay, I recognize these people now. Yeah, I know I 100%. Can ride in this group with these guys. And the next step would be obviously to try and bridge to the group that's up the course a little bit. I think that's a good strategy.
And obviously back home, like Chris and I get a front row start. It's very stress-free as long as you get away.
Yeah.
And here we're starting third and fourth row, and it's a completely different race situation. And I think early days I was really panicked when I first came here on the first lap to move up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something like realistically we're not at that level where we can move up and then stay there. So I'm really trying to structure my race plan a little bit different. And like you said, Scott, trying to get around riders that I know I can sort of stick around,
mm-hmm.
and having a lot of trust in them that they're going to move forward as well. You mm-hmm. don't have to do it on your own. So, mm-hmm. Once again, another learning curve. I'm sure we'll learn more in the next few races.
Yeah, cool.
Any plans after this tour of the U.S. is over to head to Europe for any races, or are you gonna any World Cups in the future other than what you've already seen?
Yeah, so there's obviously we want to try and get a couple of points because you need points to move up and get a better start. The end goal is always world champs. But yeah, we're seeing how we're going with these races at the moment to see if we can actually be some sort of impact, I guess, on an elite level race. Tom's still under 23 for the next year, I believe. But yeah, like, it's more one of those see how we go style things. We're here for a while, so we can actually get some racing and, like, week in, week out, be up with those front guys to see how fast they are and see if we can improve and get closer to them. So we haven't obviously booked a flight yet because we're not that organized. And also there's a few other things that we have to do before that, but we definitely need a rest once we get back from here.
Speaking of organized in the world championships, Chris, you got to tell the story of last year's world championships.
Oh, my race story?
Yes. I'm getting there.
Oh, getting there. So
especially the part when you arrived and what you had to look for.
Yeah, so that's probably one of the, like, where you just got to roll with the punches and it's full, like, Aussie battler style, I guess would be the way
Aussie battler
would say. So, pretty much, anyway, my flight, I had everything organized for a 3-week trip to Europe. I was meant to arrive to the airport and be picked up and taken care of for the next, week or so for a World Cup, and then also the week following that. Then I was meant to catch a train straight up north and then do all the World Cups and World Champs and all that sort of stuff. But pretty much, so the night before I flew out, so I flew out at about midday. The night before at about 10 p.m., I found out that all my accommodation had fell through with this person. And that, yeah, I was pretty much getting on the plane the next day without knowing anything that I was doing. So then quickly jumped on the phone, sent a few messages with a few contacts that I had through my boss at work. And then pretty much I arrived at Charles de Gaulle Airport in France. And my instructions was, look for a guy called Jean-Paul. He'll be in a cycling car.
So. Outstanding.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Like, you're 22, you just fly in and looking for a cycling related car. Are you Jean-Paul?
But the crazy part was, like, I arrived and obviously, you know, I'm pretty positive most days, and I arrived really excited, had no idea what I was doing. And I went from 36 degrees, which is quite hot back in Australia, to I think it was -1 or -2 that first day, which is below freezing. And yeah, I arrived there and this guy was driving past in a cycling car and he sort of waved and tooted his horn and I like waved back. And yeah, I presume that that was the guy. So I walked over to him and introduced myself. And then, yeah, he gave me a lift to a train station.
That is just crazy. I can't imagine just hopping on a plane in Australia, just gonna try and find someone in a cycling related car named Jean-Paul.
Worked out bliss.
Turns out that wasn't Jean-Paul, it was just some other guy. But
Jean-Paul is still there looking.
He's still there, yeah.
Where is this guy, Chris?
Come into the train station in the end, so we're all good now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. But planning to go back to Worlds this year, maybe?
Yeah, this year's a possibility. Just got to see how we pull up from this. I think the main thing to do when we get back, especially because we do have a little bit of time, is just have a quick break because we're starting to get pretty tired. Didn't have much of a break between World Champs last year and our Australian season because it starts quite early.
Mm-hmm.
So I've sort of been racing since World Champs, which is dragging on, well, before World Champs, so the most of January as well. So
yeah,
it's getting really long now.
So, Bill, since this is a they don't do that in Europe, do you want to talk about some of the races?
Yeah, let's do that.
You want to talk about Guyton?
Yeah, did you all want to talk about...
Because I think we've all watched it now.
KMC at all?
And KMC, sure, absolutely. Since we were, since you guys wrote it, I was there. You want to start with KMC?
Sure.
I don't have results. Do you have results?
We could probably find those.
Okay. Let's talk about KMC, Cyclocross Fest, new venue. A lot of people wondering what that was going to be like. And we, like we said, we get there and for the third week in a row, it's raining when we have to set up the tents, which just makes everything so much harder. I mean, you just, you know, everything's wet, you're getting tents up and it just kind of is a drag a little bit. But you guys actually took the first day off, right?
Yeah.
The C1 race. We had planned this like rest period for you guys. You had planned it. And but you did get out on the course and ride it some Saturday with that crazy drop. What did you guys think of that?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I think most of the course was pretty pancake flat, pretty powerful. And then to have the section was really broken up into thirds. We have like a long pavement section, crazy quick. Like any rider you speak to said they run out of gears. And then... the section with the drop, super sandy, super loose, just get back behind the saddle and sort of like just fall down, I suppose.
Right.
It was an awesome feature. It created a lot of photography spots and that's where the crowd really based as well. So that made you want to ride it even harder.
Yeah.
So that's always a good thing.
So that's interesting to hear about the rest of the course. So that was basically it. It was that those features and then everything else was
and then
was
long pretty, yeah. straight flats or pavement to the next feature
you could yeah. call them transport sections to be honest
sure.
You just put your head down
almost like enduro cyclocross
right. Yeah exactly. And exactly. if you weren't on the wheel or you weren't in a group, like you lost seconds instantly because people were like, me and Chriso got together halfway through the race and we rolled turns like it was a road race, like
we were swapping off, and
it made a huge difference. So that showed how quick it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's that one feature is what you see in all the pictures and everything. And that was obviously the primary feature of that that course, I think. A little weird having race cars there, though, I have to admit. Don't you guys? I mean, it's like, you know, I'm in the team set, I'm trying to tune disc brakes, listening for brake rubs and stuff, and you're... You're like, oh, God, let me do that again. So that was kind of strange. My understanding is, though, that next year... They weren't there on Sunday. They were there Saturday for the C2, but my understanding is that they will not be there at all next year.
Okay.
For the event at all. So that will be
that must have been an odd mix of I don't know if anybody was they weren't actually racing, were they? They were just out like
I don't know if they were racing or practicing or whatever, but
regardless, the two communities probably differed some between the cyclocross and the and the guys racing their cars. And it was probably culture shock for everyone.
Right. And I mean, access back into the team area was bottlenecked by this bridge that had a light you had to wait for. Like, you could only go over it when it was green, so that was a little bit cumbersome getting in and out. So I think there's improvements that they have to make, but, you know, hopefully, I think Richard Vries will eventually get it together and turn it into a better event than it was this year. Definitely a lot of work needs to be done in the pit. The pit was not good.
Sounded like it wasn't even set up before you guys got there.
No, on the C1 day, you come to the pit, it's basically a bunch of bikes laying on the ground. And then they just pounded PVC into the ground, like five rails of PVC on each side, which we all know that doesn't work. Those just fell apart within half a day. So a lot of work to be done on the pit, in my opinion.
Most important question, though, because, you know, I'm sorry if I added to some of the maelstrom on Twitter around this, but no pinwheels.
There was not a pinwheel. Okay. No. Right. It was on the map, and people were talking about it. That's what I thought there was.
Which was such a great troll, because there was the pinwheel, and then it got replaced by what I referred to as Strava art, where they spelled out KMC in the course. And I guess that didn't actually happen either.
No. But speaking of the course, I think part of the plan for the course, too, is that they will decrease the amount of pavement next year. There was a lot of... Don't you guys agree? Or what do you guys call pavement?
Bitumen.
Okay.
See, this is what I'm learning.
Yeah, I like this.
So, and there was an extreme amount of that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Definitely more than your average cross course.
There was a lot, but like we were saying, we sort of... You know, you rock up to each cross course and you expect it to be different to the last. And that's a really cool thing about the sport. So
that's cool.
If the races weren't completely different each week, then people would be complaining about that as well.
Yeah.
So
of course. Yeah.
You rock up and you ride to the conditions. And I think it made it super tactical because you found big groups on the course and people were looking for wheels at the pavement and then looking to get back in front for the next technical section. So it actually raced really well. Practicing was a little bit mellow. But in the race, when you're going full gas, I really liked it.
Yeah, and you all were saying that, you know, speeds over 30 miles per hour for part of it.
The women were doing 30 plus miles an hour, too.
Yeah. That's just outstanding. Cross race. Wow. And if we look at the results for that C1 race, which you all sat out on, we got Stephen Hyde taking the win. This is also... no Jeremy Powers there. He decided to take the week off, still recovering from his crashes up in Wisconsin. And then also, I think, feeling a little under the weather as well. So we won't see him until this weekend coming up at Charm City in Baltimore. So that'll be an interesting fight at the top to have Powers back there. And then also Hyde, who's definitely, you know,
looking good.
Going really well.
Yeah.
Jamie Driscoll, second place. Really great finish by Kerry Werner in third place in that C1 race. And then Curtis White also starting to look real strong. Am I looking at the wrong ones?
No, you're right.
Okay.
I just don't have my glasses.
So okay. Yeah. And then just throughout, you know, we'll do the Travis Liverman, good ride for him. Dan Timmerman, then Jam Fun rider Jack Kisberth,
and we gotta mention Spencer Petrov
right after that. Spencer Petrov
again,
number 8,
just started riding elite races.
Yeah,
look out, man.
Is he the youngest one? How old is Jack?
He's got, I think Spencer's got, I mean,
yeah,
you can't, yeah, he's got to be one of the youngest guys out there.
Right.
And just constant, you know, starting at the back all the time and just moving right up.
Well, that's going to be interesting then, because he's not going to be starting at the back anymore. So exactly. now he's going to have a couple more matches to save for the end of the race. Exactly. So it's going to be really interesting to see how he does without having to do that that fight for the first couple laps to get up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still, we talked to him a little bit. I think he's still getting used to the longer races,
yeah.
You know? Of course, as everybody who moves up from juniors does. But I think once he gets a few more of these longer races under his belt, gets used to the longer race times, he's going to be a force very quickly.
Right. And we move over to the women's side. Katie Compton, still, you know, looking strong, really, you know, this resurgence of Katie Compton taking the win. Ella Noble, second place. Great finish for Rebecca Farringer, third place. You know, we talked about her last week and just how she was sort of the
power that she's got is just incredible.
Oh, and on this course, it must have been just ready-made for her.
I think that's why she got, you know, at least a big part of the reason why she got such a high finish this week was long, straight stretches on pavement that she could just put that power down, and it was hard to keep up with her for sure.
Courtney McFadden, one of the women that you help support,
yep.
In fourth place. Great race for her. And then Emma White, Crystal Anthony, Carolyn Mani, as we go down the list for that C1 result.
And I'll be honest, as I was spitting for Courtney when she got fourth, when they were coming down that drop that we were just talking about, I couldn't even watch. I just had to turn away for a second as they hit that drop.
So, guys, explain that drop a little bit more. Was it basically just one line, and if you didn't hit that rut, you were going over your bars?
Yeah, it wasn't that bad in practice. I think they're like a hole developed or something during the elite men's race, because every second rider on one lap pretty much crashed over the bars. So in practice, I don't know, everyone was just sitting at the top, and then you actually rode it and you're like, I don't know why everyone's sitting at the top, because it's really not that hard. Like you just
had to go.
Yeah, you just drop in and you ride down the bottom. If you crash, it's just sand and you sort of
roll.
And
yeah, well, I mean, we all saw that that clip of Hyde, who, you know, basically did a couple forward rolls down the hill, got up and kept his lead.
yeah.
So yeah, I think that whole everyone pretty much saw everyone when they crashed, which was just that one lap where a massive hole developed. As soon as you dropped in, your front wheel dropped into this hole, and therefore pretty much like tomahawked you into the ground really quickly. But yeah, as far as actually riding it, I don't think it was anything crazy. It was quite sandy, so as soon as you went into it, like, you didn't have to use much brakes because the sand just pulled you up anyway. So
yeah.
It was almost like a bit of a blessing that it was sandy, because then sort of made for a soft landing if you did come unstuck.
Yeah.
Day two. I want to get you guys' thoughts on day two and how that turned out, with Curtis White taking the win in the men's race over Stephen Hyde. Are we seeing some sort of Klaus Van Tornot, Kevin Powell's who's going to take the win thing going on here, or do you think that Curtis beat Stephen outright in this race?
Well, there was definitely times in the race when, you know, they were both riding in the lead group,
yeah,
right, and there was definitely times in the race where, I don't know if you guys heard it, but I heard it where Hyde was like, Curtis, you got to lead for a bit, pushing Curtis to come up to the front and take the front position. So I don't know if Curtis was sitting back more.
Yeah.
I don't think it's creating any tension between them or anything. I think it's just kind of part of how Hyde wanted the race to develop. So there was that. There was also a point when they came through pit number two. They came down the pit lane, and then they did a U-turn at the right end and came back right across from us. So it was kind of cool. You could see them come right where they would, you know, there's the exchange lane, then the race lane, and then the race lane go in the opposite direction. And one of the times Hyde came through there, did the U-turn, totally bit, and not like didn't go down, but like went way wide, had to stop, put a foot down, regain it, and come back. And as he's passing the pits again, he looks over, he's like, I got no brakes. So I think he lost a big chunk right there.
Okay.
I don't know what happened with his brakes. I didn't see if he came in, because I was, you know, you're busy doing other stuff too. You don't see everything.
Right.
So maybe, I don't know if he came in and got a different bike, or if that lack of brakes in that one, because it was so sandy. I mean, the danger of wearing your brake pads was high.
Sure.
I think everybody was probably using metallic pads. But so he did yell that back, and I don't know if that's like where maybe he lost something, and that was where Curtis was able to take control,
right?
Or what?
So, also a good course for Curtis. I mean, he spent, you know, racing with Rally on the road, good, powerful rider. So speaking of powerful riders, Danny Summerhill in third, Kerry Werner finishing up a pretty spectacular weekend in fourth place, Jamie Driscoll in fifth, and Hot Sauce moving up there, a sixth place finish for Mark McConnell.
Tom, you were talking about that guy, right?
Yeah, that's Mark crazy. Yeah. I'm pretty stoked to see him up there, to be honest. We watched the first race on the Saturday, and his start was unreal. He came through the pits in like fourth or something, and I had to look twice, like, to be honest. And then I was just cheering for him, man. He's a real good dude. And
Certainly.
Yeah, stoked to see that.
Yeah, and he was telling me, just sort of like struggling with a little bit, especially in Europe last year, and it looks like he's coming back strong. Spencer, cool. Also a great result for him, seventh place.
Mm-hmm.
Has anything else we want to say about the men's side from Providence, KMC. It's never going to end.
I know. It's going to go for next year. We'll be calling it Providence, dude. I mean, that was the majority of it. I think it was dark. The lighting, I think it's something else needs to be worked on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know you were like, I don't want to be too hard on this race, but at the same time, I'll say you were telling me that this was a night race. You know, this second race went off at night. Really cool idea. First, before we even get to the issue at the end, too dark? Was there enough lights there?
It was really dark in one muddy section. I pretty much can't see at the best of times. And anyone that doesn't know, I wear glasses, and I just sort of like bump my way around the course using the fences and stuff.
He gets heckled as the professor alive.
And then, it was dark, and I'd say it was unsafe in some areas as a rider, Yeah, I mean, we all had to ride the same conditions, so there's no complaints as far as that. It'd just be nice if there's a few extra lights in some areas, just so you could, you know, see and not end up in a fence or something like that.
What did you guys think about the descent, the Friday night descent at Jingle Cross? Because that seemed like almost pitch black back there.
That was wild. You were holding on, and you're like, I hope I make it to the bottom this time, because like, I don't really want to go to hospital tonight. And, I'm pretty tired.
And especially because like, we personally, that was the first time we'd ridden mud, or like proper mud, in a real long time.
Okay.
Right.
And to be hitting that, I'm kind of happy it was dark, to be honest, because like, man, it hit a lot of the ruts, and I'm just sort of leaning back, and then it didn't help, or it did help, that the crowd was going absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
And so you're just like, I gotta go quick, because these dudes are loving it. So
The funny thing, there was a photographer out there who had this strobe light that was on all the time. I mean, he just like turned it on, and then I think he got through probably where he got through about half the field, and then like, all right, that was the leaders, and turned it off, and it was like the whole place just went black. Like they need to, so it seems like in some spots up at KMC, sort of a similar thing with some. Maybe a couple more lights out there next year. Yeah, they didn't
have anything like the big Musco light, you know, that the Vegas and Jingle have. And very little, few people in attendance. I mean, yeah, that was late on a Sunday night.
Right.
Out in an area where there's not a lot of people around. People would have to specifically go there, you know, at...
So, again, you know, another thing, recurring theme, something we talked about from Jingle Cross as well. You have the biggest races in the U.S. happening, and one of the days, you know, people not sticking around.
Yeah. I mean, it was nighttime. I felt like we were racing.
Well, Sunday night also seems tough one.
Yeah,
that's
it was really weird, you know. And it isn't, you know, the C1 was the day before, so this is a C2 race. Now you're asking people to stay late, stay all the way into Sunday, and then I got to tell the story. We're in the pit, because I think it's a legitimate complaint. We're in the pit. It's about 7:15. The race has got about another 15 minutes to go. And they come through with no prior notice and say, oh, by the way, guys, the facility closes at 9:30. So when this race ends, you got 2 hours to pack up and leave.
Right. And when you say pack up, this isn't just, you know, throw like me if I'm going to the race where I'm putting the bike on the top of my car, putting my, you know, all my stuff in the back and going.
This is a full team setup, five tents, trailer, sprinter van.
Right.
Bikes that are completely muddy. You know, you got to clean all your bikes before you can go. It just was very unwelcoming. You know what I mean? It made you feel like you were an inconvenience to
and
the,
injury to
insult.
The race. How long after the race until they turned all the lights off?
About, yeah, then the race ends, and within about 30 minutes, all the lights go out. So you're doing this in the dark, unless, yeah. You know, well, we have lights on our trailer, so that made it enough light to get it done, but you certainly can't do a good job cleaning your bike in limited light. So, very difficult circumstances that I think need big time improvement for next year.
Right, so yeah, definitely some kinks to work out at that KMC venue. Sure. Not to give short shrift to the women's field. Katie Compton, you know, going for two for two. What's really nice about this as well, really securing her spot on that first row for the World Cups that she does decide to do. And then also, you know, I think as she said, main goal this year is world. So really, yeah. Really working towards that. And living in Delaware, already moved over there. So,
yeah,
you know,
she'll have a
short drive to Baltimore, this weekend for Charm City.
For sure.
Carolyn Money, a little better day, finishing up in second. Rebecca Farringer, you know, staying steady in third place again. Emma White, fourth. Amanda Miller, Crystal Anthony, Melinda McCutcheon. There's a name we don't see time. Great
top
ride
10.
For her.
Yep.
Starting from 34th place, and then Arlie Kemmerer.
Very cool.
Yeah, good to see Arlie up there. She usually has good races in Baltimore. You know, she was in the D.C. area for a long time, so it's going to be good to see her this weekend as well.
Yeah, it was a good women's race the second day as well, and so yeah, that was awesome.
All right, should we talk about some Europe?
Sure.
I didn't see Nierpelt at all.
No, me either.
All I saw about Nierpelt was that ditch, which I love. And that's about
everyone's favorite cross feature.
Yeah. But let's talk about Guyton. That's G-I-E-T-E-N, not to be confused with G-E-I-T-E-N, which is a goat. these are the type of things that I've learned running a cyclocross website for several years, to the point that where you finally, you know, have reached a level where Dutch speakers are reading your stuff, and then they're all laughing at you when you make that typo online. Yeah, so
I've probably done that and just not.
Yeah, lesson learned there for all you kids.
start with the women's race.
We can do that. Yeah,
which was kind of not a lot happened.
No,
Sonny Kant. I mean, obviously, just goes out and, I mean, really, the only other person there probably in her league was Sophie DeBoer.
Right.
You know, not to take anything away from all the other women that were racing that, but as far as people that are riding fast right now.
Yeah,
Sophie DeBoer, obviously the main competition there, and
but then Lucinda Brand.
Yeah, true.
You know,
true.
Name that we don't really talk about a lot, getting second place in that.
Yeah,
race.
So, and I don't know. Do you think this is like more evidence that maybe she Sonny Kant just doesn't travel well? I mean,
I don't think she. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, who knows? Have to talk to her, but it didn't seem like she was super psyched on being in the U.S.
No, it didn't at all. So yeah, just kind of curious, but yeah, pretty straightforward race there, I think.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, any cross race is fun to watch.
Yep. So Sonny Kant, Lucinda Brand, and then Sophie DeBoer in third place. So does this mean Sonny Kant? Well, no, it's not a World Cup. It doesn't matter. I don't know what I'm talking about. But moving over to the men.
Yeah.
That's where we got the excitement.
That's that lap. I mean, Tom was showing us on the phone. We were like, what in the heck is
so
going
Guyton
on?
Is this really one of my favorite courses, especially the way that they cover it. I mean, they pull out all the stops as far as coverage goes. We got the
cable cam.
We got like cranes on every corner. You just got, you know, you're getting really cool views. And you know, we didn't get to see Matthew Vanderpool and Lars Vanderhaar in the U.S. for those World Cups, which was sad, but it was great to see both of them out there. You know, Vanderpool with all of the hand-wringing from people over if he's going to be okay or not. I think he sent out either a tweet or it was like a little literally saying, you know, don't worry, guys, I'm fine. A couple days before this race. And, yeah, sort of played out to be true. And it was... It's what we love. You know, we see Wout Van Aert. It's amazing to watch him race. It's amazing to go off the front and just, mm-hmm. you know, crush souls, you know, right. 3-4 laps into the race whenever he decides that it's time to go.
Right.
But what's always awesome is when you get Vanderpool back and somebody that can push him and push mm-hmm. him from the start, mm-hmm. and that's what happened in this race, you know, along with Swick, you know, Lauren Swick is another guy who's able to hang with them. You know, he just needs to be able to finish.
And so what do we think about that last lap? I mean, with those two guys, I mean, when
I think it's awesome.
When Wout's bike almost goes over his back, I was like, what is going on?
And I guess that's the point. I haven't seen a high definition clip file of the race yet, because I seem to have lost my cycling torrents. The Dutch are, I guess, upset with me, so I can't get into cycling torrents anymore. So I can't actually download these races. It's a very sad day.
Yes.
So all you people who want Svennis videos, it ain't happening.
It ain't happening. There you go.
I don't have them.
I think probably at that point, Chris, probably Wout dropped his watch.
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, I'll drop my watch again, I'll pick it up.
Chris is the one that noticed that and was pointed out. He's like, you gotta mention that on the show.
So it wasn't really, he was like a little concerned about the chain, but that's probably what lost it for him. When he stopped, he was like, oh, thank goodness I still have my watch. And it was that extra second of checking to make sure the watch was still there. It looks expensive though.
Why wouldn't you stop?
So this wasn't like a sports watch. This was just like his.
No, this was like a big gangster style thing.
Really?
Like, yeah.
That he was racing in.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Cross Vegas, that one when he dropped it and put it in his pocket and just carried on. And then he'll end up winning by like half.
I guess we should talk about that last lap for people that maybe didn't see the race.
Yeah, so set it up, Bill. Going into that
last... throwing it over to you.
Well, I forget the exact beginning. I mean, they traded places so many times. It goes back and forth. It looks like Wout kind of had the edge there at the end, and then he hops on and no chain.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing that's amazing about this race, is that you have the final sprint, which is on pavement, and they were setting it up for a two-man sprint, but before that, it's a running race. I mean, they are in the sand. They have like a couple dunes to go up and down, and then I think it was, you know, Van Aert who had a dismount first, went around a corner. He was trying to cut off Vanderpool's line, who was still riding. Then Vanderpool got off. And I mean, I think they were both cool with it. You know, they actually talked about it afterwards that it's, you know, it's giving the fans a show, which is awesome. But rubbing is racing. I mean, these guys are bumping each other. They're flying into each other. They're cutting off each other's lines. I mean, it was just amazing. And it all on foot. You know, they're not even riding at this point. This was just a foot race to the end. It ended up at one point, Van Aert's bike got slammed into the barrier, sort of flipped over, and at that point his chain did fall off, which I don't think he realized. So we were sort of robbed of an actual sprint at the end, because when they both came around the corner, got back on their bikes, Van Aert was not able to move because he had no chain on his bike, and Matthew Vanderpool in his return was able just to sort of slow roll up to the line and take the win.
And I think one of the things that makes it so cool is, like you said, it was guys, they were chopping each other, going at it, and neither one of them got pissed.
No.
I think they both realized this is just flat out racing, and we're both doing our best, and we're loving it. You know, you really get that feeling from watching those two that they're just battling because that's what racing is, and they don't take it personal at all. And so that just makes it more enjoyable, I think.
What's your guys' opinion or actually experience with that? Because you're pretty much in the trenches here in these UCI races you're doing. Is it pretty physical? Is there a lot of people sort of being aggressive, going for lines, a lot of contact?
Yeah, for sure. I think because we're both starting mid-pack, it's cutthroat. And especially early on, that's your ultimate opportunity to pass people, multiple people at the same time. And like you were saying, Rubin's racing. But the awesome thing is the standard of rider all the way through this field, you can bump into each other and no one's getting angry. That's considered to be good, solid racing, where if you do that back home with a few people, they'd be throwing punches, they'd be screaming and crying, you know what I'm saying?
It's the same thing here. I mean, it's the same thing in the lower categories here. Yeah. You always get people who get really upset if they even, I mean, if somebody's, you know, within their sort of sphere of contact.
Their halo of, halo of protection.
And
I think that's a mutual respect between all the writers over here that I'm really enjoying. And you're not going to do it on purpose, but if you're both going for the same line, it's going to happen. But everyone knows how to handle their bike, and it keeps it fun as well. Like, I really like that aspect.
And you know when the, you know, and it does happen every once in a while when there's a guy, you know, that everybody's pissed off about that he's taking it that little step beyond that, and that's that there certainly is an acceptable level of, you know, being cutthroat, as you said, and that's just part of racing.
Yeah, yeah. What else are we gonna talk about? Did you want to give the results? Did you want to give the guiding results?
Should we?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Vanderpool won.
There'll be an edit here, big edit.
No, we're not editing anything.
There we go.
Yeah, that's the women. And Matthew Vanderpool, Wout Van Aert, Lawrence Sweek, Jens Adams, Tone Aerts, Klaas Vantrenout.
Nice.
Tom Mason.
Good pronunciation. I'm glad you get to do that this week instead of me.
Tim Merlier.
So yeah, I mean that's solid. I think
Jingle Cross's own David Vanderpool.
Which was awesome, by the way. What spot was David Vanderpool in?
He got ninth. Lars Vanderhaar in his return, 10th place. So, you know, when we're looking at the Telenet Fidea savior, not really having the having the result that I think those guys were hoping for, you know, Mason up there, Aerts up there.
Yeah, but I mean, Lars will be back.
He will.
I mean, I have no doubt about it. And once January gets here and he's lining up with the new kid on, I think it's gonna be full on.
If you're doing, you know, we should start having the maybe it won't be fair, but doing like we should track brothers in this and see, you know, give them cumulative points and see who does. So you got Matthew Vanderpool first, and then you have David Vanderpool ninth. You got Lauren Swick in third, and then Dieter Swick in 14th.
There you go.
I'm assuming they're brothers. There's like four or five brothers in there.
Yeah.
Cousins.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe the Adams. Are the Adams related?
I don't know. Yeah. That's a good... That one I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know that one.
Anyway, so...
So what's coming up next? What do we got coming up? We got, obviously...
Let's just talk about Charm City. That's what's coming up next.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm so excited to be here. First time to Charm City. First time that it's been a C1, so I'm a little bit not angry, but I got to give Amanda Nauman some.
She
convinced me to come, and then she didn't show.
And she was playing so coy on it. You know, yep. I'm not sure. Yep. Not sure. You just say no, Amanda. We're all boys. We can take it.
I'm just kidding, Amanda.
We'll blame it on Chico.
Yeah, we'll blame it on Dave Oshiko, but we do wish you were here. So
yeah,
but no, very excited. What should we expect, Bill, with Charm City?
Going back just into the history of the race, I believe this is the 11th year. It's a race that has evolved over time just into making it into a UCI level race. It's unfortunately a race that in the past five or six race years, maybe not that long, always, for whatever reason, always was scheduled against Trek. So yeah. Trek always got the C1. Charm City got the C2, and it was good that this year, and you know, thank you Sven and Telenet for coming over and Trek moving their date earlier in the year, that allowed for Charm City to have this weekend and to be a C1, and I think you're gonna have a challenging course. I don't know what that noise is. Hopefully it's not actually on the recording.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're coming to the end. There might be some noise. I'm sorry. you have a lot of elevation change. You got a big climb in the middle of the race. You have four sections of sand, one right after the other, you know, just going through volleyball courts. But depending on the year, it can be like something that you don't even realize is there, or something that you make it through the first two, and then the last two get deep and people are running. And I will tell you just a little insider knowledge. If you are in a group that you want to win and it's the last lap, you got to be first through that sand. Because after that, it's, you know, one downhill, one natural barrier. There's this tree planter that's probably about, I don't know, probably double size in a barrier. You know, you can step on top of it. You got that, and then you're down the hill and to the end, and the sprint's really short, so uphill.
Pro tip, sprint. Right there.
Yeah, you got to be first to the sand. So basically, there is a big hill before the sand pits, and it's I've seen that hill be attacked at the end of races for the win.
Just for the win, yeah.
You know, this was Stephen Hyde's coming out party. Yeah. 3 years ago when he beat Jonathan Page.
Gotcha.
In a sprint,
right.
Yep, you know, Page pulling out all of the Euro tricks. There was elbows going on. There were bikes flying. He was not having any of it. But Hyde was able to persevere and take the win.
I'm really looking forward to it. You're going to be announcing, right?
I will be announcing. Hopefully, the Hurricane Matthew will stay away because I will be on top of a trailer, unprotected from the elements.
With an umbrella.
Umbrella and a microphone and a lot of electricity around me.
We'll probably be taking our tents down at the end of the day this week, or at least the canopies.
No, there is security.
No, but I mean for the wind.
Oh, for the wind.
After Jingle Cross.
People are going to be walking around with them.
No, I mean, we don't really want...
It is Druid Hill Park.
Two more tents, like, ripped apart.
Yeah,
by hurricane winds. So, we'll see. We'll at least take the canopies off. So.
Yeah.
Cool, man. I'm really looking forward to it. So I can't wait. Yeah.
So, you guys are going to see the sights now, huh?
We're going to go see some sights here in D.C. so these guys can take some video and some pictures and...
Washington Monument.
Yeah. They said they wanted to see Lincoln. that big tall thing, and I think that's what they were talking about. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The one that's in all the movies, you know.
The one that's
the big thing in the water.
Yeah.
That one.
So, cool. All right, Bill. Well, great show, man.
Yeah.
We missed Mr. David Palin, but I think we survived.
Yeah, I think we'll do all right. Which just means this is not going to be as high rated as the ones that he's on. Right. Since I'm telling you.
That's why we're getting all the David Palin downloads.
That's what I tweeted out. It is. It's the star power of Mr. David Palin.
Mr. David Palin. Yeah. So keep downloading the show and listening, guys. It's awesome. And keep coming up to us at races and saying hi and asking for pictures and whatever, because that's very cool.
Oh, well, I keep doing that, and you keep telling me to go away, though.
Also, follow Chris and Tom and their videos. Where it's just under you on YouTube, Chris?
Yeah, just Chris Aiken on YouTube. Search it there. You'll probably find something.
And spell your last name. A-I...
A-I-T-K-E-N.
Yeah.
And yeah,
the videos are awesome, guys.
Yeah, and they're short. You don't have to worry about it. You're only in there for like 2 to 3 minutes. You get a tour.
You get a tour of my van in one of them. Yeah. You get to see Courtney on race day in one of them. You get to see these guys out riding around the dirt roads and trails around my house.
You get to see, are you effing detailing it? my favorite moment so far.
The Devo Chico.
In the pits.
Yeah, in the pits. Yeah. So that's awesome. So really, really cool stuff. So.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Wideanglepodium.com. Go become a member.
Yeah.
And we will be back talking at you soon.
Later.
All right, there you have it. It was great to have Scott, Tom, and Chris stop by the basement and chat for a while. Hope you all enjoyed that. Once again, DCCX. I want to see all of you out there October 22nd, 23rd. Go to bikereg.com and sign up. Also, if you haven't gotten skills, drills, and belly aches, go to cyclocrossbook.com and pick up a copy of that. And let me know how you're doing. Shoot me an email, feedback@cxhairs.com. Also, follow along on Instagram and Twitter @cxhairs. Really getting some cool stuff up on that Instagram feed. You don't want to miss out. Okay, we'll see you next time.